Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week I am honored to share the microphone with really interesting people. They are entrepreneurs, they're authors, they're speakers, they're small business owners. They might be virtual assistants, online business managers, web developers. These are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they're really excited to freely share their business tips and their actionable advice. They've all got great stories, and they're here to help us shorten our learning curve as we know that, you know, as we all know it now, the know, like, and trust economy. And today I am welcoming back Daryl Lyons. Now, Daryl is the co-founder and CEO of Pax Financial Group in Texas, and he has been a licensed professional in the financial services industry since 1999. And he began his career in the financial sector just one day removed from earning his bachelor's degree in corporate financial management and accounting at St. Mary's University. Excuse me, I'm very raspy today for some reason. I never catch a cold, but today I think I'm trying to. So throughout his career, he has won awards for recruiting and development from Fortune 100 companies, and his book has been endorsed by two New York Times bestselling authors, Dave Ramsey and Dan Miller. You can't get any better than that. An NBA Hall of Famer and 16 successful business owners. And his business is considered one of the best places to work in San Antonio and one of the fastest growing companies in the city. And that's from the San Antonio Business Journal. So listen, what I'd like for y'all to do is read the show notes. He has been here before. We had a great interview some months ago about entrepreneurs. Excuse me. Daryl, you're going to be doing all the talking today, I promise you. About entrepreneurs who are introverts, which we both are, doesn't mean we're shy. It just means that we need a lot of alone time to process how we process our world. But read those show notes. There's a link in there to our first interview, and I would love for you to listen to that. And if you missed it, just click on the link. You can also find us in iTunes. And be sure to join us in the chat room if you're here live. Daryl, welcome back. I'm sorry for my voice. It's just, I haven't spoken to anybody this morning, so I didn't know how bad it was.
No worries. No worries at all.
So
well, thanks for having me back.
Oh, listen, I really enjoyed our last chat. I mean, in the green room and after the interview, we really should have been recording both of those as well because we covered a lot of stuff that should have been recorded. Anyway, I know that you've relaunched your book, and I think that's an important thing. We really want to talk about that today. Tell people a little bit about yourself, and what is Small Business Big Pressure? I know that that's the name of your book, but I'd love for you to give a little bit more information about how you wrote that.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm from Castroville, Texas, which is a small Texas town in the middle of some cornfields, and we moved around a lot growing up. Didn't grow up with money, so I ended up graduating from Medina Valley High School, and we lived in a little single-wide trailer park in Castroville, Texas. And so I always had an interest in how people made money, how they had houses that didn't have wheels on them. And so I went to St. Mary's University with really a hunger to learn, in particular in the area of finance. Not knowing where to go, I worked at a bank, and that's how I paid my way through college. I worked 35 hours a week at a bank right on the west side of San Antonio, which was really cool because the majority of the people in that community spoke Spanish, so I got to learn Spanish, at least banking Spanish, and really help those people in that community. And it was great. Learned a lot about banking. I didn't just show up to work. I studied everything about the bank I could possibly learn. Really thought I was going to have a career at Bank of America at a very young age. Was really kind of moving up quickly. It was really fun. I remember one time I won an award and they flew me to to Dallas to drive NASCARs, which is kind of cool. And then I took an accounting course, and the professor said, you know, you kind of understand this accounting thing. Can you tutor others? And that was just such a good word of encouragement. And then the last thing was, as I took an investment course, and the professor said, whoever makes the most money, he was going to give us a bunch of fake money, and he said, whoever makes the most money at the end of the semester gets the best grade, and we had to invest in the stock markets. So I won that. And it's funny because when I won it, I was so proud that I put posters all in the business school letting everyone know I won, kind of in arrogance but fun. And the dean called me to the office and said, I appreciate your enthusiasm, but you have to get permission before you post things like that. And that was my introduction to the dean. I know. But, you know, it was interesting. So I kind of reflect, and it was about to graduate, and I go, you know, I understand banking and cash flow, and I understand tax, and I understand investments. And then I started pursuing different careers, and the financial planning career made the most sense. And I chose to do that in San Antonio because I understood the demographics of San Antonio were rich. The trends were good. We have a strong military presence, so there's some stability in the economy there. And it's not as cyclical as some of the other cities that are more dependent upon, you know, oil and gas or import exports or some seasonal things, you know, very stable military community. So I decided to get in the financial industry, and my intent was to learn under a Fortune 100 company, which I did. And then as soon as I could get out, I wanted to start my own business. And I did that 10 years ago. The book is really just a collective experience that comes from not just me running a business, but also over the years as a financial planner, advising people and business owners and getting very intimate in conversations, not because I want to get in people's noses in their business. I just want to, I frankly just need to know some very uncomfortable things. You know, when I talk about, John, we're saving for your kids' college, they don't talk about just their numbers. They talk about a kid that might be dealing with drugs. Or we need to talk about how you're going to transfer this business to the next generation. We don't talk just about how that transaction occurs. We talk about the kids and their challenges, or frankly, maybe even a divorce. So I found myself getting into some very intimate conversations over the years, and really I don't want to say enjoying it, but recognizing that was a very a great opportunity to just walk life with people. So I realized that there was a need for some leadership in small business, and so I taught workshops for the community, and they were free. I must have done 50 of them, it seems like, and they would fill up. And so I looked at the content of the workshops, and they were books and paper and research. And I realized I had a book, and so I decided to write. And I wrote for a couple years because I'm not an author by trade. It took me longer than others. And really proud of the final product that's really helping a lot of entrepreneurs. And the feedback that I get every day is unbelievable. And in fact, I get feedback from not just entrepreneurs, but individuals and leaders and people in sales and people in ministry, church leaders, all kinds of people in leadership positions have really appreciated the content of the book. So that's where I'm at today, and a relaunch was interesting because it was originally self-published, and then had so much success as a self-published work, much of which had to do with the content, but the incredible endorsement from Dave Ramsey and Dan Miller and David Robinson and John Lee Dumas and just a handful of others, those endorsements got people's attention, and so because that self-published launch worked, a traditional New York publisher named Morgan James said, "Well, we want to pick up the rights and relaunch." They decided they wanted to relaunch January 5th, 2016.
And, I remember we talked about that when you were here last. We talked about that was going to happen. I think it was in the works at that time.
Yeah, and it just such a long experience, but what a wonderful experience. I get to meet a lot of new people, and the reality is the content of the book's been has the feedback I've been getting from the content of the book has been different. What I mean is I talk about very practical things that business people can do. I wrote the book knowing that I advise successful people to make, to help them make decisions. Many times I assumed that they knew some of the practical things about business, and they don't. And that's okay. I just made that assumption. Hey, you're successful and you know what, how to manage your cash flow, or you know what a balance sheet is. And I just always assumed that. And I just realized over the years that that's not true. So some of the feedback I'm getting from people reading is there's some practical things that I just didn't know about business that I was always curious about, and you explained it in a way that's really helped me. That's cool. And then the second group are business leaders that said, you know, there's some habits that I learned in your book that have helped me improve my success. That's cool. And then the third group have read the book, and because I authentically express my faith in the book and the stories of struggle, that have actually said, I've cried reading your book. So, you know, it's interesting. You get this concrete information, a group of people that have pulled out concrete information, a group of people that have pulled out inspiration, and then a group of people that have pulled out a story that tugged at their heart. So I never really anticipated that people would read it different ways, but they have, and it's been great.
Well, I know I've got the book on my desk, and I'm actually rereading it. You've got this great chapter on goal setting, and this is a good time to talk about this. The brand new year, you know, we all come out of the starting gate, oh, I'm going to make my goals. I tell you, I don't make goals. I know better. I know better than to set myself up like that. But what I do is I kind of dream it, and then I start setting up steps that will get me towards that end result. I guess you could call it a goal, but I don't like that. But you've got this great chapter on goals, and you've got and I'm not even really seeing what we're talking about today in that book. You've got destination, you've got dollars, you've got dialogue. So there's a lot of different things going on when it comes to goal setting. And because it is the new year, I would love for you to cover that in depth.
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, I was on Ken's Five last week talking goal setting, and they gave me like 2 minutes, you know, because it's television and you know, you don't get a lot of time on television. But I had 2 minutes to talk about goal setting, and I there's just so much to unpack. And in fact, we won't even get a chance to do everything that we need to do. But the thing about goal setting that's really cool is that I've done it for 20 years now. And if I reflect back on my life, God has been amazing in his relentless pursuit of my life. And there's just so many concrete examples of where I am today that is only been only could be supernatural. Now, with that being said, I think there's some very I think the fact that I set goals each year for the last 20 years has played a role, compounded over time, almost like compound interest, to my success today. So basically coming from a trailer park in Castroville, Texas, to running a very successful business. Has, you know, a lot of that's had to do with goal setting. And so I had to think about that for a second, very frankly, because I say that and it almost sounds like it's arrogance, but I had to say, you know what, maybe I should start sharing that with people and helping them make some changes in their lives. And so that's when I started really writing about goal setting, not because I wanted to share a story about my success. Frankly, that's really hard for me to do, but rather say, you know what, this helped me, maybe it can help others. And so it's not something that really makes transformation overnight, but it makes transformation over time, like compound interest. The process that I've used for years is this. I take time away from busyness, and I used to go to a hotel in the lobby and get free coffee because I was cheap. And I would sit and just find a hotel because I didn't have any money, frankly.
That goes back to your trailer park days, I know.
Yeah. And so I remember doing that many times.
And you're frugal, so let's just get that out of the way.
I don't know the difference. But I would go and I would find a time away. I think that's the main point. And I would wrestle with my desires. My desires were different than goals. Very clear here. My desire, let's say my desire was to marry my wife, and the first time I saw her, I knew I was going to marry her. Then, if that's my desire, frankly, not really in my control, my goals are the things that I can do that increase the probability that that desire might occur. So goals are simply the things that you do that increase the probability that a desire might occur. And so I need to start with my desires, which are dreams. And you can certainly do 5-year goals or 7-year goals. 10 years is a little too far out. But if you just do goals for 2016, it just requires you to set some time aside and write down all your desires, all the things that you want to have, all the things that you want to do, and the person that you want to be over the next 12 months. So as you're starting to brainstorm, some of the challenges in brainstorming is you're thinking, well, I don't really know. So I kind of came up with some healthy categories to help you think through what you need to consider in your goal setting. You need to think of your recreation. You got to have some goals and fun, right? You got to think of your personal finances, health, professional development, intellect, family, spouse. I think I'm missing maybe one or two, so that's going to force people to buy the book. But there's about 10 of them. There's 10 of them. I know I'm missing some of them. I don't remember all of them. I have them all in my – and here's the thing. Yeah, I'll tell you, at the end, I put them all in my shower. So I get all my goals written down, all 10 of them, and I organize them. I usually do it on an Excel spreadsheet, and I have my desire. So I want to – this year, so it's have a happy wife, right? I want to have a happy wife. So that's my desire. My goal is to call her at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock each day and take her on a date once a month. And I have an altruistic goal. I think I mentioned that one. And that's, you know, I want to be able to give back to those that are less fortunate. And what I'm going to do is plan a trip to Moldova, near Ukraine in Romania. Now, my goals need to be SMAC certified, specific, measurable, achievable, consistent, and the last one's compatible. Very key on the last one. Compatible means that as I look at all these 10 categories, it's very important that I don't overwhelm myself with stuff to do, because that's real tricky. And so I've frequently created my goals in that hotel lobby and then just set them aside for a while and then come back to them and go, you know, am I putting too much on my plate this year? And I'll start taking some off. And
your
once
editing.
I've gotten something, yeah, my editing, once I've got something then that's compatible, I will laminate it at Kinko's and put it on my shower wall for not just me but also my spouse to see when she's washing your hair, and that's just a way to keep it top of mind. It's called shower power.
I was wondering how you did that, because I was thinking, okay, he's got a chalkboard in his shower. I want one. I was trying to figure out how you did it. I mean,
yeah.
Seriously, that's my think tank, my shower and my bathtub. That's where I do my thinking. That's where these wild ideas or insane ideas or brilliant ideas, that they always come when you're in the water. I don't know what that's all about, but I mean, I'm constantly thinking, okay, I've got to write this down. Oh, crud. So I love that idea of having a laminated something that you can hang in there. That's brilliant.
Well, yeah, and it's just really nice to just see it all the time. And every now and again, my oldest son's 10. He'll go in and take a shower in mom and dad's shower because maybe the other one's being used. And it's funny because he came up to me the other day and he goes, you know, Dad, I saw all your goals and you didn't reach any of them. I go, come here. And we went, and I told him that I pointed out that I was nailing a lot of them, and there were still some I wasn't done yet, I wasn't finished with. So what a great way to hold somebody accountable, right? And so that's my favorite tool. I haven't found one better that works better for me. I'm sure there's others, because goal setting is kind of weird because some things work for some people and some don't work for others. Let me give you an example. Our president, say what you want about his politics, he's a successful man. And he struggles with smoking, you know. So that element of self-control, you know, I'm sure he set goals to quit. Man, he might have quit by now. But I know for a long time he had struggled with that. So it's interesting how some areas of our lives it's easy to set goals and achieve them, and others it's harder. And that's why I think it's healthy to have that list.
Is it an emotional attachment, do you think, to your goals? I mean, I know there's some psychology to it. And of course, this is the time of year, you know, when gym memberships, it's kind of like Christmas for gyms. This is when they're profitable. They're, you know, they need to make it right now because they're probably not going to be profitable if they don't do very well in January and February for the rest of the year. And then, of course, we all know that drops off and people just go, oh, and they go back to their, you know, same old, same old. So how do you kind of wander past that resistance to, you know, keeping to those goals? I mean, are there any things that we can do? Because, look, I'm guilty. I hate setting goals, you know, the big ones at the new year, because I always disappoint my, well, not always, but I frequently enough disappoint myself that it's kind of an owie. I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, so goal setting is requires discipline, and that discipline is a muscle. And this is not just, this is evidence to support it. There's absolute evidence that supports that this is a muscle that needs to be worked. So, you know, let me just kind of give a brief example. If you're there's so much to unpack with this analogy. It doesn't quite work 100% well. I don't think any analogy works 100% well. But frankly, let's say somebody wants to what is challenged with drinking alcohol too much. Now, set aside those that are that need to go to AA, just somebody who's just saying, you know, I'm drinking too much. I had a friend, this is why it's top of mind, because I had a friend that recently told me this year, he goes, I'm going to, you know, drink less. And I thought, okay, well, let's see if he can pull this off. And I thought, you know what, it might be better if he, instead of jumping into something that he really struggles with, why don't he get his muscles a little bit, working out a little bit more, maybe on another area. Maybe it's caffeine. Maybe he can reduce caffeine for a little bit and have a goal of reducing caffeine, or maybe he can have a goal of reading a book a month. That way he is at least getting in the, working on the low-hanging fruit, right, the ones that are easier to accomplish, and that way he can build some confidence and build up his self-discipline muscle a little bit. Maybe just simply working on his posture. Just work on your posture. Work on the low-hanging fruit first. Build up that confidence and that that ability to then tackle the ones that are really important in life. So, but don't work on the real hard ones first, because, you know, you're right. We fail at them.
So
I hope that helps a little bit.
It does, actually. So do you recommend keeping kind of a goal diary or... Because, look, at the end of the day, when we all go to bed, I know I'm guilty of this, it's very, very easy to go, oh, man, I didn't get this done, I didn't get that done, and beat up on yourself, rather than go, hey, atta girl, you got this done, this done, this done, good for you. It's very, very easy, I think, to just, you know, gloss over the small steps that you took that were successful. Don't you think?
Yeah,
have you found that?
Yeah, there's a number of different ways to do it. I haven't been able to, for me, really be consistent with the diary. But some people are great at it, and I've never really gotten there. But there's a couple of things that I do that help is I do sprints. So I've got my annual goals, but I sprint for 6 weeks. So then I break down my, you know, I've got my goal. Let's say I wanted to, I've got my, this is actually a really easy example. They're not always this easy, but I have a goal to read 4 president biographies a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've been doing this for years, 4 president biographies. Sometimes I'll get a few more in if I'm really doing well, but 4. I learn about folly and leadership and history and finance all in one setting. So that's why it's really important for me to read that. Well, what I will do is I will set a 6-week goal to read 1, right? And so my 6 weeks is a really powerful time frame. So break your goals down into 6 weeks and just sprint for 6 weeks and then just reassess after 6 weeks. And I've been doing that for years, and that's really, really been helpful.
I would think it would be, and I hadn't thought of it, you know, as – it just taking a finite time and saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do during this time, and then measuring your progress and then going back and saying, well, this is where I could have done a little bit better, and how much did I enjoy this and how much did I loathe it, and what can I do differently to make the learning process or the gaining process, you know, go a little bit easier. So I think that's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, and I wish I could take credit for it, but a guy named Bill Hybels, who runs a big church called Willow Creek up in Chicago area, And he has something called a 6x6. So, you know, breaking down your goals into doing six things over the next 6 weeks and just focusing on those. So what we've really embraced that around my company. So we have 18 employees. And so at the beginning of every 6 weeks, everyone has to announce their six goals that they're going to accomplish over the next 6 weeks, and then we hold each other all accountable to accomplishing those. And that's, you know, that's a huge part of it, as well as having somebody that holds you accountable to it.
Are they uncomfortable? Because it's, I mean, at first are they just going, oh gosh, I don't want to do this. But do you find that once they've kind of gotten comfortable with that process and they see that, you know, having that accountability, I think, and that help, are they more eager the next 6 weeks when it comes up? Like, okay, you know, I got that done. Now I'm ready to go again. Are you finding, I guess my question is, are you finding an increase in approachability to the idea?
It's a very good question. And the way I frame it is, our company is only going to go as far as the people here. And if we are a talented group of people, then we are going to go far. If we're not improving, if we're not getting better, then we have a lid. And so I want everyone here to get better. I really do. And I want them to get better personally and professionally. And so this is how I frame it. And I have to, as the chief reminding officer of my company, I often remind them that this is intended for you to be a better person. And if you're a better person at home, then you're going to be a better person here. So their 6x6s are not only just personal, but also not only professional, but also personal. So it's a combination. And I'm not really concerned about the how much is in each category. So they get six. They have to fill out six, personal or professional. It doesn't matter so much. The key for me is to get them in a habit of taking time to thinking about how they're going to get better. And then the second muscle I want them to exercise is to get in the habit of doing what they say they're going to do. And that's difficult. Not everyone, that doesn't come very easy. And so I don't make them get very specific. I even give them outs. Hey, you don't have to say, I planned out my vacation. You can say, I started to plan out my vacation. That can be a goal. I'm okay with that. I just want you to start getting in the habit of pushing yourself. And so now what I'm seeing is an organization of people that are thriving. They're improving. They're leaders not only here but outside in the community. So it's really a neat process, and it does take some time to get them on board. There's certainly resistance, but now it's just become a habit.
That was my
question.
I think
it's been 3 years now. Yeah, 3 years
now.
Oh, okay. We've been doing it.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I was asking, is there resistance? Because I would think that most people, oh, geez, it's just one more piece of homework, and I'm not good at this. And I can see where there would be some mental gymnastics. But once they, like you say, flex that muscle, exercise that muscle, get into those habits, those healthier habits, I would think it would be easier going forward.
It is. You know, if I see them that they're kind of they're making it easy on themselves. I know who to push and who to not push. You know, and I also know what they're going through in life. I have one employee that, you know, her husband's dying from cancer, and so, you know, her 6x6 goals, I'm gonna be invested in those, and at the same time, I'm not gonna expect her to you know, run a half marathon or run a marathon or, you know, do certain things that I would expect from others. But that's just a part of walking life with people, and setting goals in the midst of the circumstances, I think, are important.
So, Daryl, this really applies to life, to family, to business, to entrepreneurship. I mean, these are things that it sounds like we should all be doing. And it's very easy, isn't it, to just kind of wander off and go, you know, I'm tired, I'm not going to pay attention to this person or that person, and I'm just going to go take a shower and watch TV. And it's just so easy to do that. And I think that when you start bringing awareness to yourself and to the people around you that we're not walking this earth alone, I think that's a helpful attitude to have.
Well, it is. And I think that's been good. It's easier for me to say this than most, but I don't mind – sharing my experiences, and then just telling people, just kind of believe me when I say this. I have spoken to thousands of people about their personal finances, like thousands. I mean, you think, I guess I've been doing it since 1999, and it's here we are in 2015, and I don't know how many, 2016 now, and I don't know how many hundreds of people each year, but the thousands. And so the reason I say this is because I talk about their money. When I talk about their money, I have tissues on my desk for a reason.
Oh.
Husbands die, and children do things that they didn't expect, and children die, and life happens, and bad decisions, and all kinds of stuff, and it turns into just life. And I just realized that despite our perception that everyone has it together, I've clients that have made millions of dollars and make millions of dollars, and they're in utter despair. And you go out and you see that they've got this nice BMW, they've got it all together, they look like they're in shape, and they're outgoing and gregarious. But then they sit at my desk and they unpack that their wife's going to leave them, or their kids aren't talking to them. And you just realize, you know, we're all kind of in this together. And, you know, no one's really got it figured out. And so when you kind of go in with that attitude that, you know, I just need to smile more at the other person because they need it, or I need to mention them by their name. If I'm at the grocery store, you know, look at their name tag and say, "Hey, thanks, Mike. I hope you have a good day." Just smile. And that goes a long way. And so, you know, that's kind of foo-foo stuff, but it's very concrete in the fact that I want people to understand and trust me that I've spoken to multimillionaires, and we're all kind of dealing with the same stuff. And let's not just assume that other people all have it figured out and we're kind of the outlier and we're just, you know, we're falling short all the time. No, we're all kind of trying to figure this out together. And I think a smile and just a thank you every now and again and just calling people by their names is a good first step to start out this 2016.
I agree with you. I actually, I know you follow me on Facebook, but yesterday I had one of those days where if it could go wrong, it was going to go wrong, and it was going to go wrong rather spectacularly. And I finally just kind of gave in and let it fail all by itself. But at the end of the evening, I posted something on Facebook about, you know, how I didn't dare even drive my car yesterday because trying to make a left-hand turn into a parking lot while you're biting your steering wheel is not a good idea. And
yeah.
it was a tough day yesterday. I'm a techie person and nothing worked, and I was just so frustrated. But at the end of the day, yeah, I just kind of posted something snarky on Facebook, and I got some of the sweetest notes from people going, "Denise, it's okay." And then I felt bad for being snarky, but, you know, people just instantly reached out, and I have to tell you, I felt better. I did. Yeah, that's all it took, was just somebody going, "You know, I'm having the same kind of day, but I'm here for you."
It's so real, and you know, I love Brene Brown. You know, she talks about being courageously vulnerable. I think you can YouTube her stuff, and that's just so real. And you know, I just recognize that I don't have it together. And you know, when you start to realize that you don't have all your stuff together, and you're willing to be courageously vulnerable, you start to realize that people really embrace that, and they like people like that. And so, it's tricky. I mean, it's hard, but
you don't want to whine. Every once in a while, you have to say, you know, they kind of sucked. Tomorrow's going to be better.
Yeah.
But you
don't
want to do that every single day. You will wear people out. Okay, so.
I know. True. I know those people.
Like, really? Yeah. You can't just stop talking to me. I don't want you to talk to me anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about, I know you've got a thing that you call the three financial statements, and they're important. So what are those, and why should we know them?
Yeah, good question. So you have the balance sheet, the income statement, and the statement of cash flows. And I don't want anybody to turn off listening right now when I start talking finance, right? We got to work that left side of the brain just a little bit. Actually, the right side of the brain, excuse me. Left side.
Emotional.
Yeah, so we need to work the left side, the logical and the analytical, for just a few minutes. I won't keep you deep. But we need to work that side because many mistakes are made in finance. And because we engage the emotional side with money more so than the logical side. So these statements of cash flow are really important specifically for the entrepreneur. The balance sheet is a statement that says, here's your assets, here's your liabilities, and this is your net worth. So assets minus liabilities equals net worth. Your net worth is, everyone has a net worth, and individually and as a business. It's very important that you grow your net worth. And the way you grow your net worth is you increase your assets by saving more or making smart investments. But typically, it's more so saving. Making smart investments is sometimes pays off when you make big bets. But saving is really the key, long-term savings. Also, decreasing your liabilities is a key component as well, right? That's paying off debt, and that all increases your net worth. So your net worth is very important for everyone to just take an assessment of each year and watch that grow. So that's on your balance sheet. Your income statement is going to be your revenue minus your expenses equals net income. And the revenue is the top number. So sometimes people think it's the bottom number, and I just want to make sure you know that it's the top number. Revenue minus expenses equals net income. And so if you're running a business, your net income should be 15% of your revenue. And that's just a general number. Everyone's a little different. And so there's expenses associated with running a business, and you need to manage those expenses and keep an eye on those. And by keeping an eye on them, we have something called burn rate. Burn rate means the amount of money you're burning through each month. You need to memorize that. That's part of your income statement. Statement of cash flows are something that's a little bit more complicated, that's typically used for businesses that are running on QuickBooks. And this just shows the cash that's coming in from different sources, financing or investments. And then it's really good because it makes sure that the cash that you have on your books is the same that's in your bank account, and that's called bank reconciliation. And so statement of cash flows is really good because at the end of the day, most companies fail because they don't have enough cash. And even if they're making money, they could not have cash because people aren't paying on time. So the statement of cash flows is really, really important. That's kind of like the heart rate monitor for a business. And QuickBooks does a good job of making sure that that information is in there. So those three statements are not only good to watch, it's just good to know those key definitions that I had mentioned kind of real briefly in this conversation. It's important to know that, so that way when somebody has dialogue with you, and they will, about finances, you won't be thinking in the conversation, what's the definition? If you can remember the definition now, when you have a dialogue with somebody about business, you won't be wondering if you get definitions wrong. You'll be listening to the words that come out of their mouth, and then that way make better decisions. And so I really want people to get those basic definitions out of the way and know those. And then the very last thing I want to make sure it's very clear is emotion and money do not work. And so I really want to disconnect the two, because that's what destroys people. And we're dealing with that with the markets all the time. You know, I'm dealing with it today as China's struggling. And so I have to, you know, make phone calls to clients, and I certainly don't mind, but my key is I'm unemotional with their money. And so I want to get them to that same place, because it's dangerous.
I know. Look, been down that road. I have, and it's just, and when you mix the two, it's a mess, and it's hard to get out of that mess. Okay, so what would you tell somebody who is maybe just starting out in business, or they've gone from a job and now they're starting a business? This is a two-part question, actually, because I'm thinking of younger entrepreneurs. I'm thinking of older entrepreneurs who have stepped away from their either corporate, you know, position or out of their job for whatever reasons. Maybe redundancy. Maybe they, you know, just couldn't stand it anymore. Maybe the business shut down. Who knows? I mean, there's so many reasons. But this is what I see, and I'm willing to bet you do too at some level. A lot of people will go into a business. Maybe it was a hobby. Maybe it's the virtual assistance industry. You know, maybe it's something that they just know enough about to, you know, maybe create a business out of it. And here's my question. is it too late for them, if they've already been in business for, say, a year or two, to have a mission statement and a vision statement? And what's the biggest mistake they're making if they don't have these three financial statements? I mean, where can they kind of stop the slow bleed is what my question really is.
Well,
does any of that make sense?
Well, yeah, there's a handful of questions there. I think I can unpack them. I think if it's never too late to really crystallize the vision and mission. In fact, it really gets massaged quite a bit. And there's some other questions inside of the question that I think are very important. For example, if I had a vision and a mission and I want to change it, is that okay? Yes, it's certainly okay. I think though that it should be pretty concrete. The vision is, excuse me, so important, like so critically important. I can't even have words to describe how important these things are, because it really gets you through the difficult times. And putting it on paper and memorizing it is so incredibly powerful. So we have our vision statement, actually. We see families in our communities experiencing hope and living legacies. That's our vision statement as our company. We see families in our community experiencing hope and living legacies. So our goal in as a business is beyond dollars and cents. It's beyond transactions. It's beyond making money. Cause. And when you have a cause, you then have something to strive for in the midst of opposition, in the midst of difficulty. If you don't have a cause, as soon as you hit the wall, you give up. The cause is developed typically as a direct result of someone's unique experiences in life. So God has put people in life, and their circumstances are challenging many times. Many, many difficult childhood memories, very difficult even situations and mistakes that were made as adults. A vision statement takes that mess and turns it into a message. And so we take those challenging times that we were in and we transform them into something that not only inspires us to get through difficult times, but inspires others to follow us. Because they want to follow a charismatic cause. They will follow a charismatic cause way before they ever follow a charismatic leader. So creating a vision statement based on the authentic experiences, the unique experiences somebody's had through trials and tribulations of life, putting it on paper will get people through the very difficult times that all entrepreneurs experience. Not for the betterment of making more money, but for the betterment of the greater good of the community. In other words, our vision is to give hope to Middle America. Now, we take that one step further. When we give hope to Middle America, we recognize, you know, I really want to celebrate when I give hope to Middle America. So as a result, whenever anybody around here in my organization, 18 employees, when we give hope to somebody in the midst of a very difficult situation that they're dealing with in life, typically dealing with money, you will hear a big gong. So we've given somebody hope. Maybe we've helped pay off their house. Maybe we've helped them retire. If we've given them hope, we hit a gong, and everyone in the office hears it. They clap. They celebrate it. We celebrate that, and we measure that. So we love measuring hope. We take the vision statement so, so seriously. And the vision statement is a direct result of a lot of experiences I had growing up without money. And I want to give people hope, not the antithesis of hope, what we see on nightly news, but rather the hope that needs to be out there in finance. So I think as an entrepreneur, start out with a great vision based on your unique experiences. And yes, you may need to massage it over time, but hopefully it's true enough that it will sustain long term. I do take inventory time to time and say, you know, should I change up my mission or vision? I do that, you know, maybe every 5 years. I did it last year. I took inventory of it. I got suggestions from other people, and I kept it exactly the same because it really still tugs at my heart. Does that help?
It does. And I just wrote down what you said about measuring hope. I had never heard that. And that really just struck me right between the eyes. That makes perfect sense. But I would have never thought to say that or think it.
Yeah, I think we measure and celebrate birthdays and anniversaries. And
right.
So if things are important, we measure and celebrate them. So if your vision is important, just figure out a way to measure and celebrate it. It's typically the thing that you're going to measure and celebrate is typically going to be a characteristic of life that's important to you, whether it's hope, that you're giving hope to somebody, you're giving peace to somebody, you're giving joy to somebody. It's some unique humanitarian cause that you're participating in that's really really the one thing you want to measure. And it's fun when you do that. And then, I hate to say it, but you can brag about it. You can tell people, hey, you know, this month we gave 20 people hope. And this is how we did it. You know, I used to not like to do that, but I realized that more people need that kind of encouragement. So now we share, if we've given 20 people hope in different ways, we share that, and it gets contagious real quickly.
I would think it would. It's not bragging, and the word contagious, I think, is, you know, the proper word. I mean, you give people inspiration that they can do the same, that they can receive the same, because let's face it, a lot of us don't know how to receive at all. So, and which is a whole nother talk, I think.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say it was always difficult for me. I was challenged, mainly because of my faith as a Christian. I was challenged to share some of the things that I do. And I always kept it kind of by myself. And there were some scriptures that I read that supported that idea of not sharing the great things that are done in the community. And then there were some scriptures that specifically talked about letting your light shine. And so I struggled with that for a long time. And what I realized, because I get very cerebral, that there's not enough, as Christians, There was very few. I couldn't find many people, many Christians displaying good works in my community, and I thought, you know, that I know that's happening. I knew it was happening all the time, but they weren't sharing it. They were just keeping it to themselves. And I go, man, practically speaking, that's just not good.
Right.
It just does. There's just so many reasons it's not good. So I just came out and said, you know what? I'm going to just start sharing what I'm doing, and I don't need to brag. I really, frankly, could care less if somebody thinks better or worse than me for that. But I know it's encouraging. So, for example, this Christmas, we've done this every year for like the past 8 years, and I really never really told anybody. Is we go to the same grocery store and we just buy a ton of families' groceries. Like we stand in line, my whole family. And when somebody is ringing up all their groceries, poorest grocery store in town, I look at the lady and I said, can I buy your groceries? And inevitably they say yes. And the cashier and them, tears happen all the time. And we've done this for years, and it's so much fun. And it just blesses people during the holiday season when it's very difficult. And frankly, I know that $200 transaction is not going to change their life. What I do know is that's going to give them hope and encouragement to take one step, and that may be all that's needed
right.
that day.
Right.
So we want to give a little hope in the middle of the difficult season for a lot of people. Well, so, you know, I start sharing this story with other people, and it inspires other people to do the same thing, right? So if I keep that thing really tight and don't share because I don't want to brag, then I'm really, you know, missing out on the magnification effect that happens. But I have to do it in the right spirit. I have to do it with the hope that it magnifies, not brings more credit to me. So I think I've got my spirit right where I'm not doing it where I'm bragging, but rather just encouraging others and seeing a magnification effect of goodness.
And it does encourage others. I mean, you'll see it on Facebook all the time. Somebody, I mean, just something as small as the car in front of you paying for your coffee through the drive-thru, you know, at Starbucks. And that startles people in a good way so profoundly that they're all over social media going, oh, guess what happened? It makes their day, a cup of coffee from a stranger. mean, it really does. And then other people, oh, I'm going to do that too. It has a multiplying effect, and I love it. I think it's a great thing.
It is. And so one of the things that I've done as an entrepreneur and a leader of business people and a leader in municipalities and other areas of life, but what I've recognized is the power of influence that entrepreneurs and small business owners have. And I just want to, and this is part of the content and the reason of doing the workshops and the book and all that, but I want to shed some light on the influence that entrepreneurs have and small business owners have. And I don't want them to take that for granted. There's so much influence that they have an opportunity to make an impact on a lot of lives, employees and the children around the kitchen table of those employees, the vendors and everyone that does relationship and does business with that business. So I really, in all the workshops and in all the content of the book and all the presentations I've done, I really want to make sure that, hey, business owner, I want you to know people are watching you, and you have a great opportunity, a unique opportunity that many employees don't even have, of influencing people. And you can do that. You're influencing them. You're either doing it in a positive or negative way, but you're influencing them. But I want to bring that to light and make sure they recognize that. Not only when they recognize that, then I want to say, okay, look, here's some practical ways that you can influence them. So something similar like the 6x6 that we do. Okay, we can encourage a habit of goal setting, or maybe a $50 handshake from time to time on a day that's discouraging, or just a random day. Here's a $50 handshake. But there's some things that you can do, and so I do lay out some practical things. Because I know that you can be inspired, but you're then, okay, well, I know I have influence, but now what? And so that's why I oftentimes make sure I give some practical steps. And then once you start to get in the habit and change your mind as a leader that your influence matters, you're always looking for new ways to do it. And so then it just becomes an adventure, and you start to follow people who have that same attitude, like Dave Ramsey or Dan Miller or Randy Frazee or Patrick Lencioni. All these great leaders, Bill Hybels, I can go on and on, who have captured this attitude of leadership and the impact it has on the community, even more so than the church, right? So even business leaders have way more of an impact than the pulpit. But once you start to grab onto this idea of influence as an entrepreneur, as a business leader, you start to find other people that buy into that. You start to follow people like on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, and you start to read books by these men I mentioned and women I mentioned. Brené Brown was one of them too. You start to just gravitate, and you see that there's a culture in America that is an amazing culture that, despite all the challenges of ISIS and the threats of the moral decay and the concerns that exist in Washington, there is hope in the capital markets, in the small business, and in the markets today, of how much an influence a leader has, and we're taking that very seriously. As a matter of fact, I just met with the CEO of Coca-Cola Bottling Company, and just 2 months ago, we did a presentation together, and his influence and how important it is. We see the bad stuff, but there's a lot of good stuff happening in America through business, through entrepreneurs and leaders who get it, who realize how influential their behavior is, and then those that are starting to take practical steps. So once you start to kind of get into that groove as a leader, you start to read some of these other leaders and get around their podcasts and things like that, it just becomes a habit, and then it becomes just kind of something that you just want to be a part of, and it's a crusade, frankly.
I can imagine that it would be, and that leads me to my next question, which is, because you are sharing hope and you're doing these things within your community and within your family and your business, I'm guessing that you're seeing an uptick of other people doing it, just from the way that you were speaking just now, that you're leading by example, so to speak. So are you finding that there's any kind of measurable, anything that you can measure where other leaders are doing the same thing that you're doing in your community?
You know, there is, and because I'm not the one to really gather and organize that data,
right.
There's an organization called C12, the C12 group in each community has one. They're responsible for gathering that data. They have it, and they've shared it with me. And yeah, there's just an amazing impact. They actually share the amount of money that's given to those that are hurting and hungry from business, mm-hmm. and seeing a major increase there. And so that's just kind of a quantifiable way. But C12 group, every community has a C12 group, and that they're really responsible for providing that framework for leaders to really go down this path. And then also they like to measure and monitor the results, and so they're doing a good job. NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business Owners, has a national studies and things that they do. That one, they have good data. I like to lean on their data, but C12 is really focused on kind of the altruistic side of it.
So I wasn't aware of that, so I'm glad to have that information. So even though, and I know some of our audience is thinking, you know, it sounds counterproductive or counterintuitive to build a business or create a business without really worrying about the money too much. Of course you do. You have to have your business statement. You have to have all that information. But you're also saying that you have to have heart and soul in it. You have to, you know, it's not all business, 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 give me your money. It's not that at all. And I really wish more people understood that businesses and corporations are owned and run by people, people who do have hearts and souls. And it drives me insane to see people just bashing businesses and corporations. I'm like, did you even open the door to see who was sitting behind that door? It's a person. Drives me nuts.
It is. You're
it's
right. Yeah,
annoying.
Business is really, really, really good. It makes America great. It's not the thing that makes
right.
America great, but without it, it doesn't work. In fact, because I study business, I study what business looks like in other countries where there's more of a government control, and it doesn't work. Here, measured by patents, the U.S. is innovative. And we're innovative because we want to make the world a better place. There's just a culture here that's different. And so, yeah, I see it all the time. You know, in fact, I watched a show, and a better example, because for the sake of time, my son, this was years ago, he told me, he goes, Dad, he's sitting in the back seat, he goes, Dad, rich people are bad. And I go, what? He goes, yeah, rich people are bad. And I go, where did you get that from? And I realized he was getting it from cartoons, where all the bad guys
filthy
are the rich,
rich
ones, or
yeah,
the business guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, that's just not true. I've been a part of poor cultures and rich cultures. There's good and bad in each. Certainly the rich, it's magnified because there's dollars involved. But frankly, because somebody's rich or they have a business does not mean they're bad. In fact, I'll make the opposite case, that they're inherently good because of what they do in the community and the risks that they take and the employment that they provide. And then when they do it the right way, man, it is about as good as it can get.
That's exactly right. So you're saying that this is coming because we see this all the time. So you're saying this kind of attitude is kind of being inculcated when they're very young?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, any cartoons I watch, it's the bad guy is the rich guy with money and the business typically.
Really?
And if you watch a lot of movies too, lot of movies, yeah, the bad guy is the business guy, and so it's definitely a part of the culture. It's a really dangerous part of the culture, and so what happens?
I agree.
Is, because people don't necessarily read as much as they used to. I think 25% of the people will read a book in 1 year, read a book a year, and they don't. You know, they, there's certain churches that help frame life differently, and so, but people don't go to church really much, and then people don't
mm-hmm.
read, and then people don't watch podcasts or listen to podcasts or just absorb good stuff. Their religion of sorts has become whatever they find on TV, and they don't realize it. So a lot of their religious and their principles come as a direct result of whatever the Hollywood is feeding them, whether they're doing it on purpose or not. And so then they start to take action based on what they believe to be true. And so if you start to change your mind and look at movies, even though I know you don't watch them much, but if you start to look at the movies, you'll realize how much business and wealth are considered to be nearly demonic in our culture, and that's just frankly wrong.
It really is. And Listen, we've got people in the chat room. I'm going to warn them. We're still streaming. We're still recording, but we're about to lose the chat room. Can you stay with me for just a couple minutes more, Daryl?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, because I'm not quite done here. We always have so much to talk about. No, I agree with you because, you know, the one thing that people, you know, obviously people want to be happy and healthy and, you know, but of course they always kind of equate that with money, don't they? I'll be happier when I get to, you know, a new car. I'll be healthier when I get a gym membership. It's, money is so, so important to how we operate and lead our lives. So to think that it's demonic or bad is just frankly psychotic as far as I'm concerned.
Well, unfortunately, that's just kind of not been, that's just not the case anymore. And many people just find that that if you're running a business, then you have to be greedy. And that's just not true. Many entrepreneurs, I know me, for example, I don't think people understand. You know, I went to the pawn shop several times and had to pawn things just to survive.
I think we all do when we're younger. I mean, the pawn shop and the flea markets, that's where you go.
You know, and it's such, right, thrift stores and pawn shops, and you're just surviving. And so there needs to be a respect that entrepreneurs and small business owners need to be rewarded for the risks that they took. I think there has to be a respect for that. But many entrepreneurs love giving back and love the employees and want to create a great life and make the community better. And business, and it's not limited to just entrepreneurs, but small business in general. And then, of course, bigger businesses as well. It certainly gets to become challenging when when you're influenced by the stock market. So I was talking to a company just yesterday, day before yesterday, and they were publicly traded and then decided to become unpublicly traded and become private because of the challenge of the influence from the stock market on the decision making. It's a whole system, a whole nother conversation, but typically most leaders, and I meet with CEOs of companies all the time, most of them are good people that are struggling with life just like all of us. And they're not trying to tear apart the world or trying to do good things, trying to make a fair deal, not maximize profits. Many of them are trying to just make a fair profit. I know that's very ambiguous and it's subjective, right? But most of them are trying to make a fair profit.
You can't stay in business if you're not profitable at some level.
You can't do it. You know, I had somebody tell me the other day that he was mad about how much Dave Ramsey made. He was mad about how much he made, and I thought, well, because of his house, he has a big house, and I've seen Dave Ramsey's house, and it's big, it's certainly big, but this guy has done more for America than nearly any pastor. He's changed the lives of so many people. He gives and gives and gives, and I personally know this. Like I'm not saying this from a third party. I personally know this man is a giver, and he cares about people, and he changes lives, and so. So what if he buys a big house? Good for him. And so I think one of the things that we just need to get over is this point of reference. Because is there a point in which we say, oh wait, $250,000 is too much? If you make over $250,000, that means you're a bad person. If you make under $250,000, you're a good person, right? So what's the threshold? Well, frankly, there is none. And so business is inherently good.
It's none of my business what you make. I mean, whatever you have managed to do, good for you. Seriously, it's not my concern.
It's not, you know, you get me on this thing and I just go off, don't I? I'm sorry.
Go, keep going. No, you ought to see me. I'm sitting here grinning and go, woohoo, there he is.
Sorry. Dr. Rabbi Lappin does a good job talking about that in his book, Thou Shalt Prosper, and it talks about, you know, the goodness that business has. Another good book.
Listen, I'm like you. I read a lot, and I love that you read the history of the presidents. History, when I was in school, was one of my favorite subjects and continues to be so today. And I really, really wish more people were more aware of history. I mean, you know the old adage, you fail to relive it if you don't learn from it. But you know, I think reading is just such a huge part of what a lot of entrepreneurs do. I have one big question for you, though, before I let you go. And what is the biggest mistake that you see entrepreneurs making with their money in life or in the community or in their business? I mean, can you pinpoint that?
Yeah, I can. It's very practical. They don't pay their taxes, and it's not that they don't want to. They just many of them just get distracted, frankly, and they hire people that they think are doing it, and they just look away and just start selling more, and just are so worried about selling more products and services that they go, oh, my bookkeeper, my accountant's help doing it, and it'll get done, and then they look up 3 or 4 years later and they go, oh, didn't get paid or didn't, not enough got paid, and so. Then they owe IRS $100,000, and I've seen this over and over again. So I would say that for me, this is a huge mistake. Is you just have to stay on top of your taxes, both income. So you have several taxes. You've got income. You've got self-employment tax. You got Social Security tax. You got franchise tax. You got payroll taxes. Oh, and then you got property taxes. So there's a lot. I understand it's overwhelming, but that doesn't give you a right to ignore it. You got to stay on top of that. And you can't just hand it off. You've got to trust but verify. That's probably the number one thing that they can do.
So what would you tell people who find themselves in that position where they're looking at the IRS, through the keyhole going, oh, crap, now what?
Yeah, and by the way, I didn't mention the electronic funds transfer payment system is an online system that you can easily transfer your tax payments through that system. It takes a little while to set it up, but that's a nice, easy way to pay your taxes. If somebody's struggling with their taxes and they're behind, the IRS will want the money. They're going to want it. They'll ask you for your credit card. They will. They typically will take installments, but there's going to be a pretty heavy interest on it. First of all, you're going to have a long hold time when you call them. I will let you know that. And then there's something called offer and compromise that hardly happens, but that's sometimes an option to get the amount reduced if it's paid. But that doesn't happen very often. I think it's a one time out. You get one time of those in your whole life. It's best if you go ahead and pay, it may be a few thousand dollars to get a CPA, not a bookkeeper, but a CPA, to help you with it. I suggest that Dave Ramsey, again, huge fan of Dave Ramsey, he has these ELPs in the communities that people live, and you can go on his website and look for a CPA in your community that's endorsed by Dave Ramsey. And those are typically vetted a bit, and they're held accountable to to the services they provide. So that degree of vet and accountability is something I would feel comfortable with. It may not be perfect, Dave's got a big system and process, but typically the probabilities you're going to get a better person than you would just, opening the phone book. And so getting a CPA on your side to navigate that market is going to be really your first important step. And then just recognizing that you're going to have to pay it. Stop putting it off. If you put it off, the interest just is going to blow you away. It's very aggressive interest rate, and it's just going to get worse.
Scary. Listen, thank you. You always give so much information. Do you have any kind of parting thoughts that you would like to leave our audience? And where can they find you? And where can they find your
Yeah.
book?
Yeah, you can find the book on Amazon or any of the favorite book retailers. I think probably in the latter part of the month they'll be at Barnes Noble's, but in the meantime you can go to Amazon. And then smallbusinessbigpressure.com is my website, and you can find me on Twitter, Daryl W. Lyons. LinkedIn is very professional. I like LinkedIn, and any of those platforms are really good. Just if you're encouraged, if there's things that you're doing that you want to share. I'd always love to hear feedback. I typically respond if I get feedback from your listeners. So just want to encourage them to do that, and they can find me all those different ways.
Great. Well, listen, best of luck with the new book relaunch. I mean, the book is a great book, and I strongly suggest that our audience listen to it. I've got it on my desk. It's all marked up. And you autographed it for me, too, and I normally don't do that, but I was going, oh, and I have some yellow highlights in there, which normally, typically, I don't do, but anyway, it is.
That's good.
It's a good book. Well, listen, Daryl, thank you so much for being with me here today. It's always wonderful chatting with you, and I know our audience got a lot of great takeaways and a lot of wisdom from you today. And everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Daryl Lyons, and I will see you next week. Daryl, thank you.
Thanks for having me again. It was fun.
It was.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.